Welcome to a special instant reaction podcast on the IB Sports Podcast Network. We will be covering night one of WrestleMania 37. I am your host, Chief Keith Fleming, head of the table, one of the three men from the Team Turnbuckle podcast, and I am honored to have with me Mr. IB Sports himself, the president, the CEO, RC Carlton. RC, what's going on, buddy?
I'm good. I'm pumped up because Mania was exceeded my expectations. Really good card.
Especially, you know, and again, they did everything they could last year. Don't get me wrong. It was a mess. I'm thankful that they put it together. But I think, you know, after last year, you kind of forgot what a good Mania or even a good Mania night is like because it really was. It was exciting. I mean, overall, it exceeded my expectations. Did you feel the same way?
Oh, yeah, beyond. And I was kind of like, I was just thinking about it today. It's like, this is one of the least excited WrestleMania as far as excitement goes. This is probably one of the least excited WrestleManias I was for or whatever. But yeah, it, and I don't think it was just because I had low expectations. It was just really good.
And we've talked about this on the Team Turnbuckle podcast a good bit. I really think it's a great idea to separate the Manias and have a Saturday, Sunday, not have, you know, I think it was 2 years ago, we had that like 7 hour show, which is just, that's too much. Even for the biggest wrestling fans, it's too long. The crowd ends up dead. People watching end up just exhausted. And I know some people were worried, well, you're going to eventually have, you know, the good night and the not so good night. But if you look at the two cards, I think that tonight didn't have as, you know, many star-studded matches as tomorrow does, but they prove that as long as you book it well and you keep it moving and you have high quality matches, it's not going to matter, and it's going to just make it overall more enjoyable for, you know, the fans.
Yeah, I think it's I think if you do, you make sure you don't, I think they, for the most part, they, you make sure it's not a JV night and a varsity night, and tonight did not feel like a JV night. Even though I did disagree with them putting the men's championship or the Raw championship match in the beginning, it had a big match feel. Obviously, Bianca and Sasha had a big match feel. You had Bad Bunny, who was a celebrity star that, you know, was garnering a lot of attention. So you had a lot this night to sink your teeth into.
Completely agree. Let's start. I was going to just go down the car, but instead, let's kind of go through the highlights. And then there wasn't very many lowlights. We'll get to those kind of at the end. The biggest highlight, in my opinion, has to be the Bianca Belair, Sasha match, and just Bianca, you know, arriving, becoming a star tonight.
Yeah, I agree. I remember you were really frustrated with them last year, I think, after her first Royal Rumble debut, and then they got her off NXT, and they really didn't do anything with her. For a while. And I think too, we're just not patient with people. Mm-hmm. Nope. Someone was just talking about Montez Ford on the page, and how long did it take Shawn Michaels to A, get a singles career, B, actually become the champion? I mean, it was about the boyhood dream. I think he'd been in it. I don't know, but the boyhood dream, it had been there a long time. Like, it takes a long time. And I don't even think in the wrestling industry, most of the time, outside of your Brock Lesnar's or your Goldberg's, if you don't pay your dues, and those are physical freaks too, that just amazingly catch on. If you don't pay your dues, and she's an example of somebody actually that's, how to put it pretty quick, you got to be like an amazing athlete or just a force of nature. But I was really happy and proud, and you know, it's kind of weird, just an African American, like. I mean, I guess the first time I really realized Sasha was Black was up to this, because she's kind of racially ambiguous. And that's no problem. But Bianca looks more like me, so I feel even more like, yay, you know?
It was, again, just an amazing match. I thought it was so powerful to have her crying tears before the match started, which, again, it's something I've been saying for 2 years. One of the best things about Bianca, and she has this unbelievable athletic ability, she's great in the ring, it's just she's so genuine, and it comes across in everything she does. And just, again, you know, for most people, that would be embarrassing or, you know, something bad to be, you know, crying at the beginning of the match. But it just, you could tell it mean, you know, it meant so much to her. And I loved your point about patience, because I'll be the first to admit, I'm not the most patient person in the world, just in general.
You're trying to rush Becky Lynch back for pregnancy.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, that's just the way I am. But the Shawn point is so smart, because I've been watching a lot of old matches, because, you know, we're doing the Mega Powers Explode podcast where we're looking back at the storyline. And I just happened to watch the 92 Rumble. The 92, that was before WrestleMania 8. That was when Shawn actually broke up with Marty and started his singles career. And he'd been around, like you said, for 3-4 years in WWE. It was another 4 years before he won the title at WrestleMania 12, to your point. So it doesn't always happen at our pace, but that doesn't mean that it's the wrong decision. And these guys, you know, as much as we like to complain and stuff, WWE is a big machine that's gone on for forever. So they make a lot more right decisions than they do wrong. I just want to talk for a second about the match, because when Sasha jumped outside and Bianca caught her, gorilla pressed her,
that was amazing,
walked up the steps and threw her in the ring. Do you remember seeing that in any men's match? Like, I don't think I've ever seen that in any match.
Well,
ever.
I don't think they didn't do the role. I don't think any of them have ever done the role or quite like, I think somebody's tried it, but it was just amazing. Well, not the gorilla press part. Even if they picked him up, they didn't do the gorilla press.
Right.
Yeah. So that,
I mean, it looked like she was doing a CrossFit amazing workout, right? Like, I mean, it was just
a shocking athlete. Like, she is one of those athletes that make your eyes pop off of you. And that's why I was saying the point that I made about elite athlete. She's someone whose athleticism pops off the screen. And I don't think I've seen a woman like that.
She's on a level all to herself. Is basically what you're saying.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I don't think I've seen a woman like that in wrestling. And I love Charlotte. And I thought before Charlotte was the most athletic woman, but I've never seen a woman whose athleticism, I'm like, wow. Like, no, they might be good athletes, they might be well trained and very skilled, but I've never seen a woman that I say, wow, like I say, wow, with Brock Lesnar, or I say, wow, with LeBron, is just big, but right, just the athleticism. I'm trying to think of somebody else that's super athletic. But
well, I think, yeah, to your point, just, like, Bianca, Brock is just, right, again, man, on another level. You know what I mean? Like, there's nobody.
And the fact
like
that she has the strength and she has the combination. She has the strength, the size, and the speed and the agility. Like, she can do that roll through, pick up, gorilla press slam, and still do backflips. Like, it's insane, her athleticism.
The Bianca era is going to be a lot of fun. And I just, again, want to give Sasha credit. She, for whatever reason, doesn't seem to get the acknowledgement that a lot of these other women stars do, that she constantly has really good matches. They're always good. And it's like what I try to tell people. You may not like a wrestler. John Cena was this way for a long time, or even like their style. But when they're consistently in good matches, it takes two to tango. You have to give that other person credit when they're consistently in these matches that are a lot of fun to watch and are just really entertaining. And I do feel a little bad for Sasha, because this is another loss at WrestleMania. But I'm sure if WWE is smart, they're going to play to this. And, you know, whether it's next year or a few years down the road, you know, she's going to be winless in WrestleMania, have a huge match for the title, and she's going to overcome the odds and get that first W. The second
one, I don't understand.
Yeah.
I don't understand that one. That one kind of irritates me a little bit. Like, Ric Flair never won in WrestleMania, and he's the greatest wrestler of all time. I really don't think it matters. I don't think it's something that she's taken to her grave. So, oh my God, I never won at WrestleMania. Like, she's going to be around for a while. And I don't think WrestleMania records matter outside of The Undertaker. Triple H has a losing record at WrestleMania. I think Shawn Michaels has a losing record at WrestleMania. Like, I don't.
0-6, though? She's 0-6. I mean, like, I understand what you're saying, but, like, she's, to me, too big of a cog in WWE to, like, not have a marquee win.
But she has a. I mean, she's got a marquee spot. All that matters,
that's fair.
The wins and losses don't matter. What matters is how you come across in the matches. They're never going, well, until they want to make it an angle, they're never going to say she's 0-6. That's something we're saying. WWE literally doesn't even care about your record outside The Undertaker.
Sure.
Like, that's not something they even promote. I think it's just a smart fan thing, but it's not the kid, the people at that show or the kids that watch aren't like, oh my God, I don't like Sasha because she never won at WrestleMania. They don't train the audience. Like, if it was AEW maybe and they keep the records, but they don't train the audience to have long memories. Like, I don't know what Triple H's record, but it's not good. And Shawn Michaels' record is not good. Ric Flair never won. You know, I'm trying to think of Randy Savage's record.
Right.
It's probably not good. He lost. No, he did beat. No, he lost. He beat Steam. He lost to Steamboat, right?
Right. His two biggest moments were winning the title at 4 and then beating Flair at 8 for the title.
Yeah, and then he lost to Steamboat. He lost to Warrior.
He lost to Hogan. He has losses, like, too.
A 0 is not great, but most of the stars that we know have losing records if you look at it.
Yeah, if you're not Stone Cold, Hogan, et cetera. There can only be one champ, basically. The Lashley-Drew match, which, again, I'm with you. I don't like a championship match, a world championship match opening the show. I just don't. I think there's other directions you can go. I understand they want to spread out, the two world title matches. I understand that you want to have a match right off the bat that's going to get the crowd up, and this succeeded in that. But all that is beside the point because, again, great booking. I loved everything about this match, and good for WWE for basically making the decision that, even though I'm sure they had pretty much promised or been telling Drew this was going to be his moment, and he did, deserve it and earn it, but with all the momentum Lashley's had and how he's finally reached this point that honestly a lot of people thought either he should be at or he should have reached, coming into this point in his career, to let him go over and to basically go over clean. I disagreed with somebody in the group who was saying that, that was a weak way to distract him. I thought that was a great distraction because it was something that you can't really, if you're Drew, say that Lashley cheated to win. He took his eye off the ball for a second. It allowed Lashley to move out of the way, and then he got the win. I just was really, I love this match, and I love the finish. You kind of on the same boat.
Yeah, I love the match. You're two big men that can go. I love the pace that it was kind of, I think it might have been helped a little bit by the fact that they had to wait, but I really did like the pace. They kept it moving. There was only like that one rest hold where they were kind of in the corner a little bit, but there weren't rest holds. They were going back and forth. The match and whoever was doing the agents on that night and the wrestlers too, but I noticed reversals were key. There were so many matches, and especially we haven't got there, but it might be the match of the night, but Seth and Cesaro, but this match too had a lot of great reversals, more than they do typically at a regular pay-per-view or a SmackDown or a Raw. And it really kept the pace fun and exciting.
Sticking with the highlights, I thought that they did a really good job tonight of having two coming out parties, both Omos with his win with AJ over the New Day. I thought that was booked perfectly where, AJ was basically, he's the better worker. He got beat up. You make the hot tag and Omos just, destroys the New Day. I mean, because he is a massive guy. And then it was kind of the same story, although Bad Bunny actually probably did a little bit more with Bad Bunny and Damian Priest, because Ron L has been saying on the podcast for a while that Damian Priest, he thought, could be a star, or, at least a upper mid tier to maybe even, eventual world champion on the main roster. I didn't agree with that. I didn't really see anything from him in NXT to make me believe that, but having now seen him in the ring, he does have a good look, and he's been impressive in what he's done. Which debut were you more impressed with, or I guess I should say, which debut do you think is gonna have a bigger career moving forward?
I'm not high on Priest. He's fine, but guys that look kind of weird like that, they're like a novelty.
He does have a strange look, doesn't
he? He's fine, but no. You put him in the offshoot, he's in the Vampiro, trying to think, Aleister Black a little bit. He's like in that little lane. That lane is not gonna draw a whole lot of money. I think almost, I don't know. I think he'll get pushed big, but I don't think he's gonna become a star. I think they like to push big men because big men are a spectacle. So I think he's gonna end up going further but I'm not sure how far it goes because he still is really green and very limited. I love that shot of AJ on top of him.
That was amazing.
Like a child. Yep. And he had both belts. It was amazing. That's the thing that too, I think when it comes to long-term planning and people think I'm always defending WWE, I'm defending the logical stuff and trying to look at it and not be reactionary to everything. I didn't like that they took the belts off Shelton Benjamin and Cedric Alexander, but they did it. And maybe they could have done a three-way. I think maybe that'd have been better, but you already had a tag team match.
I think it means more and it's a bigger win beating New Day. I mean, they're definitely the greatest tag team in the last decade.
And maybe he could have had more men he went through, but you gave a moment to a guy on the big stage that everybody was curious about and you sacrificed it because maybe, I mean, Shelton, I met him in real life, nice guy, whatever. We took a picture, but you know, his career is what it is. They missed his peak. And then Cedric Alexander, maybe, maybe not. But you do have a potential big star with Almost, and you got the rub with AJ, and you gave him the rub with the New Day. So you're trying to create a star to make money. So I understand it, even if I'm not like 100% on it. Like I might be wrong that a triple threat might not have worked as better as well.
I'm with you there. I just want to also say the phenomenal forearm from Omis's shoulders was just a thing of beauty, and B, I hope that is their finisher moving forward, because that's a beautiful, great move. And I owe an apology to WWE. I try to, you know, if I give them crap, but also when I'm wrong, I'm wrong. You know, I was so upset about them breaking up the Hurt Business, and it didn't make any sense.
Well, that could still be a mistake.
I don't think so, though, with having Lashley basically go over clean. Because if it's all about making Lashley, you know, the champion, sort of the Brock, he does. He needs to be on his own. And MVP's different because he's a manager, but, you know, kind of having, you know, lackeys or whatever, I don't think, you know, that necessarily works. And with this victory, I really do think that they have plans now that – you know, Brock's gone. It doesn't look like he's coming back. And they're going to basically make Lashley probably the biggest, toughest dude in WWE. And I think that's great. And he can thrive in that role. And if that's in the direction they're going, I now understand why they did what they did. Because I was furious in the moment, but it does make a lot more sense knowing what happened tonight.
I don't think... You don't need if you're a super group or stable doesn't have to have lackeys. Like Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard weren't lackeys, you know. So you can have a tag team. You just like, we're together, we hang out, we love each other. You know, the Evolution, they weren't what Batista and Orton and Flair weren't lackeys. Like everybody can have their own identity, and I think it brings. It maybe to your point, maybe it's better for Lashley, but you're helping to have a stable that strong. I think you're helping the overall product and you're helping more people be over. But I'm not sure. I mean, I think you can get Lashley over in the same exact way by having the Hurt Business and they just don't interfere because I don't need you. They just don't interfere. But yeah, maybe you jump people. But yeah, I kind of see your point though.
The other thing too, I did say on the podcast is, you know, if they stick with what MVP has said, you know, that it's all business, you know, they could end up bringing in two other guys that need a rub, you know what I mean? Whether it be Ricochet or whoever, and it just continue to be a deal where we will, you know, bring you up, but you gotta perform. You gotta, because basically when the rift happened was when they, you know, lost the titles and, you know, as Lashley said, embarrassed them. Another, and again, it's just over and over surprisingly good matches. The Braun Strowman Shane match was the one that I was probably the most cynical about, because I'm kind of tired of Shane at this point. You know, I appreciate everything he's done and, you know, putting his body in these crazy, you know, stunts for all these years, but it seemed like a stupid match, but everything really did come together well. Like, I mean, the amazing spot of Braun ripping the cage, you know, bringing him back inside the ring. And it really made point to the story that they told, because, you know, it was a lot of a copy and paste from the Nia Jax, Alexa, angle a few years ago, being beautiful, ugly, and assist, as you know, stupid, smart, but it still was very effective. And I loved that, you know, Braun was like, you know, who's stupid now? That was my favorite part of it at the end, like before he basically threw him off the top of the cage was, you know, who's stupid now? And I just, I'm a big fan of Braun. I don't know where you stand on him, but I hope this is where they start pushing him back in the right direction, because
he's got a good pop.
He's a star, man. I've been saying it for years. You just have to let him be Braun. Just be a big, strong dude that can do all these amazing feats. He doesn't necessarily have to be champ. He just needs to be Braun and basically kick ass in everything he does.
I think they missed their opportunity with Braun because there are only so many feats of strength you can get until they get goofy because you know they're fake. Now, if they're more reality-based, like they did with the steel cage, but I'm not sure how many times he could pick up a truck or pick up a stage, pick up an ambulance. But I thought the match was really good. I thought I was laughing about how many weapons Shane had kind of set around the ring, but kind of makes sense. And he's the boss's son, so he could probably pull that off. The cage spot was crazy. Well, tearing it and also throwing Shane. Shane, as promised, got his big spot that he always gives. And I think, too, I think we all get real cynical about Shane. And I'm not sure he's the best person to do this, but he really is kind of just a jobber to the stars. Like, they took a little far, but they had the best in the world, and they let him stay on top a little too long for that. But eventually, Kevin Owens did come out on top on him. And with this, he made Braun look bad for a couple weeks, and he came out on top. He fought AJ, which I don't know why he fought AJ at WrestleMania, but AJ came on top. So in the end, he's doing what's right. And I wish they would give it to somebody else, but at the same time, he is elevating the person that he fights.
I completely agree with that. And I mean, we talked about on the podcast previewing it that it's hard to believe that it's only been like 4 or 5 years ago since he came back and got literally one of the biggest pops in the last decade and a half, because he was so loved and missed. And it's just, I think it's oversaturation, which happens, you know, with a lot of guys. And also Shane's moving up there for a guy that's always been a part-time wrestler. He's never been, you know, a full-time. That's what he does. The Cesaro match, the UFO swing, just absolutely amazing. Incredible. I literally don't know how you do that and then break the record for the actual swing. I mean, it couldn't have been more than 2-3 minutes later. I don't know how Seth didn't throw up in the middle of the ring.
Right.
And obviously those two guys, we knew going in, they're both incredible wrestlers. They hardly ever have a
Seth
bad
was
match.
Amazing. I thought personally that this was like the best I had seen. I don't watch the Ring of Honor shit or whatever he was in before, but since he's been in WWE, I thought this is the best I'd seen Seth. He was at his best. He was selling and reversing and his athleticism and whatever the hell that is that he had off the top rope. It was like he bought into the Mr. WrestleMania thing that he's claiming, which is almost sacrilegious, but he has, and I think they should continue this, he has had big WrestleMania moments and good matches. And you remember the curb stomp with Randy Orton. I mean, just these moments that he's had, not necessarily winning, but he did have the Money in Bank win. But he's had a good WrestleMania track record. So I was very impressed. I've honestly, since Steph has started, I know you were high on him, but since he started this Messiah thing, I've just been kind of blah. I used to be really high on Seth. I thought he was the best one in the Shield. But I was really impressed, and he did the job, and it was great moment for Cesaro. I don't have any faith in what they.
Right.
I think you guys misunderstand me because you would think I wouldn't like a Cesaro.
No, I do. I understand you. I know what you're saying. That's what I've been trying to tell Sam. It's like, buddy, you're just kind of setting yourself up for disappointment. We know what it is at this point.
But I'm not anti Cesaro. I think he's somebody who's been pushed. I think he's someone in the Benoit mold. That if you sell it, the wrestling skill is special. You can get over just from being in the ring if you're a special guy in the ring. And he could be, like, I don't think he could ever be like the legit top guy, but he could be one of the top two or three. He could have a run, you know, he could be an upper mid card, sometimes main event kind of guy. And I think he could, he could occupy, like he just showed, he could be in a feud with Seth and shine. Like if you do it right, he can shine in any feud, in any situation.
He needs to go to AEW as much as anybody, where, you know, they do wins, losses. The personality is not quite as big of a deal because, I mean, I completely agree with you with everything you say, but even when you have that kind of talent in the ring, there, if you can't really talk, which he's just not very good at, and you don't have this huge personality, it's about the storylines. And they haven't really given him a bunch of great stories to work with. Unfortunately, well, and one other thing too, real quick, because I just thinking about this, Seth was phenomenal. He's been great since he came back. And I think it shows that these guys do need to take little breathers and time off.
He has been great since he came back too. Yep. I'll say that too.
And I mean, it just shows that, I mean, it's not, he wasn't gone that long. He was only gone for like 6 to 8 weeks, but these guys, even when not on the road, this has got to be something that's really taxing. And, you know, it's nice to, you know, get a little break. And I've been saying for a while, I actually think WWE would benefit from having like a 1 or 2 month off season where they don't do anything. Like if you want to really, you know, build up NXT during that time, that's great, but just give these guys a break. I think the matches would be better. The storylines would stay fresher, you know, et cetera, et cetera. There was a couple of negatives. The first, they couldn't control with the weather. I really was worried at the beginning because, I mean, the radar looked awful. It definitely poured. They said, I guess the wind was blowing up, that chairs were getting knocked over. But, I mean, this is, you know, what you deal with when it's outside. I have heard that tomorrow is supposed to be even worse, which that would be a real bummer because after tonight, I think everybody's going to be really pumped for the matches tomorrow night.
Yeah, the weather, can't control it. I feel like every Sunday, a Dolphins or a Tampa Bay game, if it's a home game at 4 o'clock, there's always a delay. And when I was doing fantasy a lot, that would get annoying. And especially with daily fantasy, because I wanted to see what was going to go on. But somewhat predictable with Florida weather and Florida in general. I thought it was interesting that the crowd, if I was going to go a negative, the crowd was kind of a negative. Now, I know it was, 25-35% capacity, and I know it was a stadium, but
supposed to be wearing masks too, which that may have played a role too.
It didn't feel like – it's good to have the feeling, and I'm sure the wrestlers felt it, but on TV, it did not feel like – a WrestleMania from the crowd. And I know, but I mean, there've been other WrestleManias that I felt like I heard the crowd more. Shucks, the one that y'all hate with Bret Hart and losing to Hulk Hogan.
Oh, nine WrestleMania, nine in Vegas.
And the same one where Seth and Randy Orton,
31. That's
the same one where Sting fought Triple H.
Yeah, that's 31.
Multiple outdoor ones. And I felt like, I think, was Shawn Michaels against Undertaker outside?
I think the second one might have been. I know the first one was in Hollywood.
Yeah, one of them was outside. So, yeah, I mean, I've heard the crowd, I've heard wrestlers say they could barely hear anything sometime in those situations. But just with I would think they'd be screaming out their lungs, but if they were wearing a mask. But that part was just a letdown because I really was excited to hear the crowd. But
it's crazy too. It was just nice to see people there. I mean, I know that's weird, but it really was to just see people no matter what, and not a screen of somebody's head.
They didn't do any crowd reaction shots, did they?
That was something that I don't know if they did that on purpose because of the mass or because they were separating them out, but I was surprised that they didn't because AEW does it every week on Wednesdays, and people might have mass or whatever, but it's good. It shows people are excited or shocked.
Yeah, they just showed the one when the announcer was saying it at the very beginning. And then I don't think they showed a crowd reaction. Well, they showed Bianca's family. But other than that, they really didn't show reaction shots. So,
and then the last thing for the negative, and again, I don't want to, you know, take this out on the women's division because it's not really the women's
division. It's not them. It's
but the fatal four-way, like the way they did, they should have been on an actual fatal four-way where they were all involved because doing the elimination style, you know, you end up getting these like, you know, 1 minute matches. And it just, it did. I will say that the crowd seemed really pumped after the Lashley McIntyre match. Mm-hmm. And then it was like, this kind of threw it off. And I hate to say that, but it just never, the crowd never seemed the same after this match.
if that had been the women's match, and I don't know, I can't remember because I was watching SmackDown, but this show, I was walking around because I didn't care. But they had, was that an elimination match last night with the tag or a fatal four way?
It was a fatal four way.
Okay, so I didn't care about that either, because if you're not going to tell stories with these people, these women's teams, now I was commenting on the year, like maybe 2019 probably, when you had, what were they, Fire and Desire? Or whatever they were, with Mandy and Dark Hair Girl. What's her name?
Oh, Sonya. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good team. And then you had the Iconics. You had Sasha and Bayley. You had just gotten Nia and Shayna together. Like, you had solid teams that told stories, that had backstage segments together. You know, you literally have a makeshift team with Carmella. And so I'm blanking on everybody's name now. Carmella and the other, Billy Kay, a literal makeshift team. I don't know how long Natty and Tamina have been together.
They just threw them together as well.
You can't. Nobody cares if you just throw a team together.
Like, and then the one team they have in there that had won a title shot, you don't let win in the Riot Squad. I was really disappointed about that.
Doesn't make sense to me anymore. And then they try to make Tamina this monster, but then when it's time for her to actually win a big match, she loses. And you really can't have two monsters in Nia because it doesn't work. So, and Natty's just I don't know what you're doing. And you threw the team together. They have tagged for a while, but it doesn't work with Mandy and poor Mandy. That's so
you know, that's going to be everywhere. She had a little slip.
She's like, she's like an 11. Right, yeah. Make up for it. But,
yeah, I guess you're right. She's going to be okay. I don't think
I was hoping it was Dana Brooke. Because, you know, Dana Brooke doesn't have a career. But and Dana Brooke's been trying hard, but no. But yeah.
So. And Dana's got, well, of course, Mandy's got arms too. I would say Dana's got the kind of arms. She'll beat you up if you say too much to her.
They've got two. They're like too blonde. Like, it's just too.
I loved your name. That was, what did you say?
Atomic Blonde.
That was great. That should have been, I do like that.
Or maybe they get back to the Hollywood Blondes. I guess they technically own that. They could maybe do that angle, but they need something. They're gonna have to be mean girls. They need personality, and they're not. I think it's because of Mandy, but even like 2 years before that, they had the first women's tag team. What was it? Well, whatever it was, Sasha cried and went home, and they lost the tag team titles. But
Mania, yeah,
yeah, it was a Mania, yeah, yeah. I feel like
that was to the Iconics.
But they, maybe that's the one Sasha should have won. But they just got to tell better stories with these women. And they're not telling, the thing about it too is they're not telling superior stories with the tag team men. So I'm not going to blame them.
They struggle with tag teams so bad.
Yeah, so just keep them together. Keep them together. Keep them together. The history, tag teams are meant, they're a team. Teams are meant to have autonomy. And I'm going to rant, so I'll let it go. But keep them together for a long time. Keep the Iconics together. Keep the Riot Squad together. Keep them together.
So before we get out of here, is this going to, obviously I think Shayna is going to, Bianca is going to be what we all remember from night one of Mania, right? And probably both nights, I'm assuming, unless somebody really has a moment tomorrow night.
Who would that be? eventually you're going to be right. Now, well, I do think it's going to be like the there's always like the sweetheart moment at WrestleMania. You're like, oh, I'm so happy for that guy or that gal. And then there's the storyline kind of moment. And I do think the Edge, Daniel Bryan, and Roman Reigns thing is going to be the headline that everybody remembers, because you got three very big time guys. You got three guys that are not like, you know, it's not The Rock, it's not Stone Cold, it's not Hulk Hogan, but you got guys that I think that are like in that jumble, like if we want to make a top 50 WWE of all time, you got guys, you know, they're jockeying for getting in the 30s and the 20s.
I think you can say safely all three are top 25 guys.
Yeah, So you got some serious stuff. And I think Roman's going to go over, because I just think it's his
year. I hope so.
To go over and to be dominant. I mean, eventually he does have to kind of lose. But I'm happy with all three. Edge is one of my favorite wrestlers of all time. Roman's been terrific during this. And, you know, Daniel Bryan's one of my favorite wrestlers of all time, too. So, and it's kind of funny, too, how all three of them had wrestling taken away from them, and now they're in the main event of WrestleMania. We forget Roman had leukemia.
Dude, it's, I've been saying, I'm shocked WWE has not, and I guess it's because technically two of the guys might be heels, but, I mean, it is, it's remarkable. You had a guy that's beat leukemia twice, and two guys that were told they would never wrestle again. And the three of them are going to headline the biggest wrestling event in the world. I mean, I'm sorry. Like, unless you just have no heart, that's an amazing story. It really is. Because, you know, all three of these guys love this. And for them to get back to this point, it's pretty amazing. And I do think they're going to tear the house down. All three of them have also been very good in triple threat matches in their career. And WWE has a really good history in triple threat main events at WrestleMania. Most of them have been out of this world. Anything else you want to cover before we get out of here?
I do want to say, I just want to give, you know, and of course, obviously, you listen to this, 5 stars, rate it, subscribe, all that good stuff. But I do want to say, I want to give Roman a lot of credit, because he is really, not just how good he is, because he doesn't have to do this. And this is something when you listen to, like, the former wrestlers and the bookers and the agent. I've been listening to Bruce Pritchard for the first time, like, all week long for the last couple weeks. But, and Jim Ross, I always listen to a Stone Cold. The level that Roman is, he doesn't have to be that giving to Daniel Bryan. And this whole feud, he's made it look like Daniel Bryan's had his number. And he's a smaller man. He's letting the smaller man lock him up, tap him out. Even in the 2 weeks ago, Daniel Bryan dodged something and locked him up. He's being really giving. And then even the things Daniel Bryan is saying, a star doesn't have to do that. And so the fact that he's doing that, I think, deserves a lot of credit too. And I guarantee you, he will put himself in peril to a much smaller man to get out wrestled in submissions, you know, tomorrow too. And he doesn't always give like that either. So I have a lot of respect for what he's doing.
Completely agree. And everyone has talked about, you know, obviously the improvements Roman's made on the mic, his character, everything, and they're absolutely right. But Roman in the ring, since he has came back from leukemia the second time, I mean, he can wrestle anybody. And for a guy that size to have a good match with a big guy, a small guy, you know, a quick guy, I mean, it's very rare. And WWE is very fortunate to have basically Lashley, McIntyre, Reigns. Those are three, Big E. I mean, those four big dudes that can really go in the ring. And as somebody, you know, both of us grew up watching wrestling, that would seem insane. Yeah, like I would have never guessed that, like, these big guys could actually be having the Savage Steamboat match, you know, of the night. They were more just the big dudes that kind of solidified that, you know, these dudes are big and bad. So
what was your favorite match of the night?
My favorite match of the night was, I mean, until the very end, it was the Seth Cesaro match, but that Bianca match just, I mean, it blew me away. The women's division, and I know you're kind of on my side on this. I've been saying since 2019, I think the women's division has almost carried WWE, and that especially at the top of the card, when you're talking about the main events and you know, the women's and the men's division, they've been better. And that just continues because you went from Becky's rise, and that was, you know, after Ronda arrived, which was really fun and cool, you know, right into the Bayley Sasha stuff. Bayley's amazing run as champion. Yeah, I thought
Bayley was my 2000 because Roman came late.
Yep, that was like I agree. She was my 2020 MVP too.
I was a little upset, and I would never believed in Bayley ever. But Bayley was the MVP of 2020 during the pandemic era. I do believe that, especially at least on the SmackDown side. Maybe you could say Drew, but she was brilliant just with everything she was doing. So to me, your MVPs of the WWE, I agree 100%. Last 2 years have been, you know, not including this year, have been Becky and
Bayley.
And Bayley, and then Ronda somewhere in the top 10, five too. So yep. Like that was the most good. I wouldn't watch it if the women didn't wrestle on there, because it's new and it's fresh and they have different takes on things. And every now and then you will get like some stinkers like that tag team match, because there were some botches in there, and you know, you get some stinkers, but for the most part, and especially at the top, like it's great.
It's almost like WWE's in this amazing position where, you know, you had Bayley and, you know, Becky and Ronda and Sasha. So you had like Bird, you know, Magic and Jordan playing together. And then LeBron all of a sudden, you know, comes in while these guys are still great. And I mean, they're all, I mean, it's just, it's embarrassing the riches in the women's division right now, because I mean, I'm with you. Bianca is special, and I can't wait to see her have classics with Charlotte, with Bayley, with Becky. Her and Ronda will be amazing, because to see somebody that actually can, you know, physically, you know, impose her will on Ronda, because Ronda's so quick and so great with all submissions. I mean, it's just, it's going to be great. And again, kudos to WWE. It was a great night. RC, I appreciate you coming on here and doing this with me. If you're available, do the same thing tomorrow.
We'll see.
I understand. It's a lot.
How many times I wake up tonight.
It is a lot. It is a lot. But for Keith Fleming and the CEO president, RC Carlton, this has been an instant reaction podcast on WrestleMania 37 on the IB Sports Podcast Network. We'll see you guys soon.
Everybody.
Thank you.